Hi. It's been a while, but at last, Fictional is back, and better than ever. We listen to your feedback, so we're trying something new. Starting now, every episode of Fictional will be a complete story. No more waiting for multi-parters week to week or season to season when, say, The Three Musketeers or Pride and Prejudice are finished. Instead, stories will come out individually, as they're ready, but all at once. To celebrate, we're releasing two episodes today. One in the next couple of weeks, and then working on some longer episodes in the meantime. Now, more than ever, it's helpful to be subscribed, so you automatically know when episodes drop. It feels good to have Fictional back. So, let's get started. I'm Jason Weiser. From Bardic, this is Fictional. Watson, tell me what you notice about this man, Sherlock said before sitting back in his chair. Watson sighed. Cool, so we're doing this again. Watson makes some observations. Sherlock flexes on Watson and makes some deeper observations. The client thinks it's magic, and Sherlock explains it away like a sleeping toddler could have noticed it. Still, the cases were interesting enough. Whatever. Here we go. Watson stroked his mustache. Okay, the easy stuff. He was a commonplace 1800s British tradesman. Obese, pompous, and slow. I'm getting a little classist, but okay. He wore a baggy gray shepherd's check trouser, a not overly clean frock coat, a drab waistcoat with a heavy chain and a squarish piece of metal dangling from it. Watson didn't know what the metal meant, but he was sure Sherlock would let him know. He had a frayed top hat, a faded brown overcoat. Wow, we 1800s gentlemen wear a lot of coats. And he had a wrinkled velvet collar. Oh, and blazing red hair with a generous salting of gray. He looked at Sherlock. Was that enough of a setup for him to spike? Sherlock nodded. Yes. Beyond the obvious facts that Mr. Jabez Wilson here had done manual labor, takes snuff as a Freemason, has been to China recently, and has done a considerable amount of writing lately, I can deduce nothing else. Sherlock sat back and soaked it in. The look of shock, confusion, and then the pure awe that washed over the client right before they begged Sherlock with those four beautiful words. How'd you do that? It was almost as good as the cocaine that the literary Sherlock actually did. Almost. Watson was actually interested in hearing details about the case, so he took a seat as Sherlock ran through the gamut of his gimmick. He knew Mr. Wilson had performed manual labor, because the muscles on his right hand were so much larger than his left, which, okay. Jabez remarked that he used to be a ship's carpenter. The Freemason thing was easy. He was wearing their symbol dangling from his chain. So was the travel to China, if you've made a comprehensive study of the world's tattoos and actually added to the literature on it, as Sherlock obviously had. Jabez had a fish tattoo on his right wrist, with a specific dye that was only used in China. As for the writing he had been doing recently, his stained shirt cuffs gave him away on that one. Mr. Wilson furrowed his brow. Huh. Yeah. Now that Sherlock had spelled it out, it didn't seem that magic at all. Sherlock harumphed and waved his hand. Let's get on with it then. Mr. Wilson had been explaining everything before Watson walked in. If he'd take it from the top again, please. Jabez nodded and pointed, again, to the advertisement on the folded newspaper between he and Sherlock. It read, To the Red-Headed League, on account of the bequest of the late Ezekiel Hopkins of Lebanon, Pennsylvania, USA. There is now another vacancy open, which entitles a member of the league to a salary of £4 a week for purely nominal services. All red-headed men who are of sound body and mind and above the age of 21 years are eligible. Apply in person on Monday at 11 o'clock to Duncan Ross at the offices of the League, 7 Pope's Court, Fleet Street. Sherlock sat back in his chair and then asked Watson for the paper and the date. Morning Chronicle, April 27th, 1890. 2 months ago, Watson noted. Sherlock turned to Jabez. All right, Mr. Wilson. What's going on? It's a weird advertisement. How has it affected your life? Watson sat the paper back down. What, Sherlock couldn't tell that from the smell of his breath and the way he parted his hair? Sherlock glared at the doctor as Mr. Wilson started. Mr. Wilson said he had a small pawnbroker's business. Not a large one, just enough for a living for him and an employee. Employee? Sherlock asked, puffing to light his pipe. Jabez nodded. A little more than that, actually. He's a guy who came in a few months back. He had the experience, but he wouldn't take the pay. He said he wanted to learn the business. He started, and it seemed like he already knew the business. There wasn't much to it, Jabez admitted. Buy low, sell high. Anyway, the guy was doing well, and he seemed to forget that he had volunteered to work for half pay for a few months. And a few months turned into a few more. And then it was almost a year. Jabez pursed his lips. He wasn't really planning on reminding the employee that he needed to double his pay, but he made it up to him in other ways, though. Jabez was a widower, and he never had kids, so he had some rooms upstairs. The employee, named Mr. Spaulding, lived with him. Sherlock nodded, and Jabez continued. Spaulding was a good guy. He was really into photography, always snapping pictures and going down into the basement to develop them. Wait. You mean to say he just takes pictures around the store with a camera? That giant accordion-like box? Sherlock asked. Jabez shrugged. Yeah, he didn't really get it. He didn't understand photography or art at all, really. But it seemed like a hobby for the guy during the slow hours of the store. Sherlock puffed his pipe. All right, they were kind of getting into the weeds here. Let's get to some more relevant stuff. When did Jabez see the paper? He thought about it. 2 months ago, give or take. Spaulding brought it in. Rushed in, more like it. He said there was a vacancy in the Red-Headed League. Apparently there was this eccentric American millionaire by the name of Ezekiel Hopkins, who decided that even though his country was going through economic and social turmoil after the American Civil War, you know who really needs help? British men. Ezekiel had spent time in London when he was a boy. So when he died, he left a massive fortune in the hands of the trustees to invest and apply to the interest of making the lives of red-headed men in London easier. Sherlock interrupted again. It seemed like there would still be thousands of people to apply for that position, if it was that easy and it paid so well. Jabez held up his hand and shook his head. Not so. It was only for the men over the age of 20, and only those with bright, blazing, fiery red hair. Not dark red or strawberry blonde. In fact, Spaulding thought that he was the only man in London who might qualify for the position. London, however, felt differently. North, south, east, and west. Fleet Street was choked with red. Jabez looked at the number applying, and even if he did have the right color hair, there would be hundreds of men in before him. They were going to choose someone else. He knew it. They should just get back to the store. And the two employees were here, so it was completely empty. Spaulding wouldn't hear it, though. From everything he knew about the Red-Headed League, Jabez was the perfect guy for the job. He grabbed his employer's arm and started elbowing his way through the crowd. After passing every shade of red, they arrived at the office door. Spaulding pushed it open, helping Jabez inside, and then stood stopping it with his foot. Inside, there was a man in a chair with a deep auburn hair being interviewed by another who sat behind a table. A man like Jabez, with a deep, fiery red. The man in the chair was going on and on about his poor and starving family or something, but the man at the table stopped listening when he saw Jabez. His mouth went slack and his pipe clanged onto the table, but he didn't care. Tears started welling up in his eyes. It was beautiful. He stood, and not taking his eyes off Jabez, pushed the auburn-headed man out of his seat, telling him that they would stay in touch. The man tried to speak up and say that they didn't have any of his information, but the interviewer put his finger to the man's lips, still not taking his eyes off Jabez, and said, "Shh, no one cares. Leave now." He directed Jabez and his magnificent head of hair to the still-warm chair when he took out a magnifying glass. "My God," he said, combing his fingers through the luscious red mass at the top of Jabez's head. It was magnificent. He clenched his jaw. He was so sorry to do this. He twisted one of Jabez's hairs around his finger and pulled. Jabez yelled out, and the interviewer instantly let go. He was so sorry. Low-life brown-haired men, or blonde men, were not above putting on a wig. to join the esteemed league. Someone in 79 lasted 3 years before his deception was discovered. The man behind the table had never seen someone else quite like Jabez, with such beautiful, fiery hair. He barked to his assistant to make an announcement. It was over. They had found the newest member of the Red-Headed League. He shot out his hand and pulled Jabez to his feet, shaking it vigorously and congratulating him on his entrance to the league. This was the first day of the rest of his life. He asked if Jabez was married. Did he have children? Jabez shook his head. Nope. You would have thought that he just told the interviewer that the man's family had died, with a look of sorrow that washed over his face. Oh no. The stipend was for the propagation and spread of redheads, in addition to their maintenance. Unbidden, the interviewer brought up his hands and felt Mr. Wilson's hair again. He looked Jabez up and down. The man was still young-ish. He knitted his brow and bit his lip. Okay. They could make an exception for Mr. Wilson, only because no one, save Mr. Hopkins himself, ever had such a distinct and majestic head of red hair. When could Mr. Wilson start? Jabez stepped back and started fiddling with his chain. Well, that was tricky. He was actually already a business owner, so... The interviewer's eyes widened. So what exactly? So he was excited to join the prestigious Red-Headed League? So he was grateful they just bent one of their two rules to allow him to join? So he'd be here tomorrow? Spaulding spoke up, saying that he hoped he had the right to speak here, seeing as he was a mere black-haired gentleman, but maybe he could handle it. What were the hours? 10 to 2, Monday through Saturday. The interviewer informed Spaulding without making eye contact. Spaulding slapped Jabez on the back. They could do that. The pawn business was mostly an after-work thing anyway. The shop was dead until 4 on weekdays. Jabez thought about it. Yeah, okay. What did the work entail? Beaming, the interviewer informed Jabez that, for starters, he had to be in the building each day between those hours. If he left, he would forfeit his position forever. No excuses would avail, neither sickness nor business nor anything else. The work was easy enough. Copy the encyclopedia. The encyclopedia? Jabez asked, cocking his head. The interviewer laughed. Yeah, the position was for the support and betterment of red-headed men. Jabez didn't expect to sit in the room and do nothing all day, did he? Mr. Wilson nodded. Kinda yeah? The interviewer laughed again. No, Mr. Wilson was going to learn, and the best way to learn was rote, tedious memorization for hours on end in an empty room. He had to bring his own ink, pens, and blotting paper, but they provided the table, chair, and encyclopedia. So, tomorrow then? Jabez took a deep breath. Yeah, sure. Kinda sounded too good to be true, but he would give it a shot. Well, as it turned out, it wasn't too good to be true. The next day, with a penny bottle of ink, some paper, and a pen, he arrived at Pope Street a little before 10 to find the Encyclopedia Britannica sitting on the table before him, and a man with copper hair by the name of Duncan Ross holding a pocket watch. Wordlessly, he opened up the book to A and left the room. 4 hours and then 4 days passed quickly, and soon it was quitting time on Saturday. Everything had been going well, and Jabez was pleasantly surprised when Mr. Duncan Ross, his, proctor and evidently a manager, plopped down 4 gold sovereigns on the table in front of him. With a grin, Jabez looked down at the money, up at the supervisor, and then back down at the money. He couldn't believe it. The supervisor nodded, saying that Jabez had done good work this week. He'd start again at Abbott on Monday. He did great, too. He had worked out the fastest way to copy, was filling bookshelves with his writing, and he learned about agriculture, archers, armor, architecture, Attica, and he was hoping to make it to B by winter when it all came to an end. An end? Sherlock said, sitting up. Jabez nodded. Yeah, he went this morning at 10 and found this. He pulled out a square piece of cardboard that had been hammered onto the door. It said, simply, "The Red-Headed League is dissolved. October 9th, 1890. Sherlock looked at it, nodded, and then handed it to Watson, who read it and then looked back to Sherlock. Both men snickered before Sherlock, and then Watson, broke out in hysterical laughter. "I really don't see what's so funny about this," Mr. Wilson barked. "If they were just going to laugh at him, he could go somewhere else." Watson wiped a tear from his eyes. His own laughter slowed. "Yeah, yeah. Why were they laughing?" He just started because Sherlock was laughing. Sherlock stopped abruptly and sighed at Watson before turning to Jabez. When he discovered the note, what steps did he take? Jabez said he had 4 hours to kill, so he took a lot of steps. He knocked on doors, asking about the league, went across the street, and even called the offices of the landlord. "And," Sherlock said, waving his hand and waiting for the details. "And no one had ever heard of such a league." Even the landlord had never heard of Duncan Ross. Jabez was confused. The man in office 4? The one who was renting from him? "The redheaded guy?" the landlord asked. Jabez facepalmed. He was here asking about a league of redheaded men operating out of the office in question. So yes, the redheaded guy. The landlord smiled. "Ah, old Bill. Bill Morris, yeah. He was a solicitor using the room temporarily until his new office was ready. He moved out yesterday. Made kneecaps or something." "Kneecaps?" The landlord shrugged and handed Jabez a slip of paper with an address on King Edward Street. It was Morris's forwarding address. Some kneecap factory or something. Standing outside of the address, not an hour later, Jabez found that it was, in fact, a factory that made artificial caps. But it was not, in fact, the forwarding address of one Bill Morris. No one at the factory knew that name, or anyone matching Morris's description. When Jabez made it back to the store, Spalding, the assistant, was outraged, saying that they should write to the main league offices in the U.S. And Mr. Wilson did, but that could take weeks, if anything. He didn't want to give up on this job, so he came here, to the famed detective, to try to figure out what happened to the league and what he could do. Well, okay, let's take stock here. If we're looking at it, what are you really out if the league is dissolved? Jabez sat up straight, outraged. He had lost 4 pounds a week. Watson nodded. Pretty good. What'd he do? Cut down sugar, paleo, keto? Oh, pounds the currency. Got it. Sherlock turned back. Anyway, no. He didn't lose 4 pounds a week. He was richer by 30 pounds. 30 pounds he could easily lose by hiring a private detective. And that said nothing of the granular knowledge he had gained on every subject under the letter A. He had lost nothing by the league's dissolution. Jabez bobbed his head back and forth. Okay, but he was just curious. If it was a prank, which it really looked like it was, he wanted to know why people were messing with the redheads of London. Even though this was an expensive joke, seeing as it had cost them £32 plus the price of a rented office in London. Sherlock sat back and relit his pipe. Yeah, for a prank it was pretty expensive. Tell me, what do you know about your assistant? Mr. Vincent Spalding, was it? Jabez nodded. Yeah. He came to work at the shop after an advertisement, but he was one of a dozen or so applicants. But you chose him because he was the cheapest, Sherlock stated. Jabez nodded. Yeah, the cheapest by half. Sherlock asked what Spalding looked like. Normal-looking guy for London, he supposed. Oh, except for a splash of acid on his forehead. That's what I was waiting for, Sherlock said. Ears pierced? Jabez nodded, yeah. Spalding said he had it done when he was a boy, by a wandering vagabond. Which is who you really want piercing parts of your body? He's still with you? Jabez nodded again. All right, that's all I need, Sherlock said. It's what, Saturday? I'll have this wrapped up by Monday. Sherlock sat back and closed his eyes, puffing on his pipe. Jabez kept talking, but Sherlock did not. And eventually Jabez got the hint. Watson helped him to the door and told him that Sherlock was eccentric, but they would be along with the solution. They always were. When Watson returned, he looked at his notes, saying that he didn't want to besmirch the name of a good man, but he thought Spalding was scamming his employer. Sherlock opened his eyes and tapped his empty pipe out on the ashtray. Hey, there you go. First try, too. Nice job. Yeah, he's absolutely scamming, Mr. Wilson. Now we just need to figure out why. Anyway, enough of that. Watson, do you want to hang out today? go to the opera and dinner, just you and me hanging out as buddies? Watson arched his eyebrows. Yeah, that sounded surprisingly fun for the detective. Was he sure this wasn't a work thing? Sherlock scoffed at Watson's incredulity. What? Why did everything have to come back to work for this guy? Did Sherlock really need an excuse to hang out with his best buddy outside of work? Watson cocked an eyebrow. Yeah? Kind of always? Sherlock shook his head. He wouldn't hear any more of this. We're going to a show and dinner. Just the two of us. It'll be like a boys' night or something. Get your coat. After the third trip around the Saxe-Coburg Square, Watson sighed. This was a work trip, just admit it. Why were they here? That's when he saw a sign up ahead. One that read, Jabez Wilson, in big block letters. Oh, why not just say so? It's because, Watson, you kinda suck at reconnaissance. If I told you what we were going out for, you would have done your sneaking Scooby-Doo walk all the way here. The one that you're already starting to do right now. Stop it. Sherlock rapped twice on the door of the pawn shop. All right, get it together. He's coming. Yes, how can I help you? A bright-eyed, clean-shaving young man said as he opened the door. Yes, I only wish to ask. How would you go get to the Strand from here? The man smiled and nodded. Of course, it was the third right and fourth left. He closed the door and went back behind the counter at the far end of the store. You came all the way here to look at Spalding? Watson asked. No, his knees, Watson, are not here. Sherlock said the man standing behind the desk is the third smartest man in London. Let's go home. Watson thought about it. Wow, that was so nice of Sherlock, calling Watson the second smartest man in London. Sherlock straightened. Yes, he absolutely included Watson in that initial comment and wasn't just thinking about it right now. Let's go. When they arrived back at home, Sherlock collapsed in his chair with a sigh. This was dangerous business. He had seen that man before. Watson should go home and get ready to go out again tonight after 10. Watson shrugged. Sure, why not? Oh, and Watson, one more thing, Sherlock said as he started drafting a message to someone on the table. Bring your gun. John Clay, the inspector from Scotland Yard explained at 10:15 that night as he put the drawing of the man on the table. The acid scar, the pierced ears, this was the guy. John Clay was a young man, but he was at the top of his profession. He was a thief, forger, and a murderer. His grandfather was a royal duke, and Clay himself had been to Eton and Oxford. They had been seeing signs of him for nearly a year now. He would crack a safe in Scotland one week and be raising money to build an orphanage in Cornwall the next. With a nod, Sherlock said he hoped to introduce John Clay to the gentleman at Scotland Yard tonight. There are already two hansom cabs outside to take them to the square. The inspector would ride with the stranger that Sherlock had only referred to as Mr. Merriweather, and Sherlock would ride with Watson. As they bumped through the labyrinth of gaslit streets, Watson couldn't help himself. He usually had some inkling of what was going on during these cases, and he got that Mr. Spalding was some sort of super criminal named John Clay, but what did that mean for Jabez? He said his business was fine. All the money seemed like it was in order. Maybe it was just a prank. And they just passed Mr. Wilson's pawn shop. Didn't they need to, make an arrest? Sherlock didn't answer, and he motioned to the door when they arrived at the alleyway. There, Mr. Merriweather was already standing by a big metal door and ushered them inside. They went through a series of hallways and passed through a foot of steel until they were there. A bank vault. Sherlock held up a lantern. He whispered that they weren't vulnerable from above. Nor from below, Mr. Merriweather announced, and tapped his walking stick on the floor. What are you doing? Sherlock hissed and snatched the stick. Did the bank owner not read the letter he sent that night? That sounded hollow, Merriweather said. Yeah, seriously. That's what the letter said. They're tunneling in. Before you start, yes, I know it's supposed to be solid rock. It's not anymore. Go sit down and don't say anything. Let the grown-ups work. Mr. Merriweather actually obeyed. He climbed a crate so big that his legs dangled like a child's and watched Watson and Sherlock prepare. They had been tunneling for weeks. That was the reason for the creation of the Red-Headed League, to get Jabez out of the house for 4 hours a day so they could dig. When the digging was done, so was the Red-Headed League. By the time Wilson got a letter back from the U.S. with confirmation that it was a lie, Clay and his associates, two of which happened to have red hair, will be across the sea with 30,000 pounds worth of gold. As it turns out, if your new employee will work for half pay, his photography hobby consists solely of taking pictures of your basement and the distance between your store and a nearby bank, and he constantly has clothes covered in dust that's the same color as your foundation, it might be a little suspicious. Now, they needed to put out the lanterns, because it was time. The bank and the store would be closed the following day, giving Clay and his men a day's head start before the crime was discovered. The bank was closed, and Jabez went to bed between 10 and 10:30, so they wouldn't wait too long after that. The inspector from Scotland Yard had three officers watching the door of the pawn shop, so now there were only two exits for Clay. The inspector said that he wanted to take Clay alive, but if they had to start firing, Watson should have no compunction about shooting them down. An hour and 15 minutes later, light broke through from the floor of the vault, and a man's whisper shouted back that the coast was clear. When he felt a pistol against his temple, he realized that it wasn't quite as clear as he thought. Blocking the hole, and any shot of coming upward, the man said it was a trap. Sherlock heard the click of a pistol in the hole. "Clay, it's no use," he yelled. "They had his man up here. There were three others outside the pawn shop. It's over." He rolled his eyes and uncocked the pistol before dropping it to the ground. "Looks like this was all buttoned up then. Good job. You usually didn't face this sort of adversity." "Likewise," Sherlock said, as they cuffed the man in the bank vault. The red-headed idea was new and frankly refreshing after the idiot criminals I'm used to dealing with. "Sherlock, can we not compliment the murderer?" Watson hounded from behind. "Whatever," Sherlock said, throwing up his hands. "I'm just saying, it was a good idea. Game recognizes game." Sherlock sat in 221B Baker Street that night, finishing up his last pipe before bed. He thought about John Clay, a man at the head of a criminal conspiracy so large and so brazen that it shut down a city street with red-headed men and would have made off with 30,000 pounds from a bank vault had it not been for Sherlock. There had been a man out there with an unprecedented criminal reach and an intelligence that rivaled his own. Sherlock would never admit it, but it gave him a shudder. John Clay was gone now, but what if? What if there was another? Of course, we know there is another out there. Someone pulling the strings of Britain's underworld. A shadowy presence that has his hands in everything. The Napoleon of crime. Yes, of course we will get to the story of Sherlock Holmes's greatest nemesis. But before that, and the fateful fight at Reichenbach Falls, there are so many more stories to tell. If you like the podcast, we have a little shop. It's a fun way to help support the show, get cool stuff. And for the first time ever, we're offering something just for graduation. It's a handwritten personal message from us to the graduate in your life, plus a few bonus gifts. Check out this and the other stuff we make at shop.bardic.fm. Today's story was adapted by Jason and Carissa Weiser from The Redheaded League, a short story by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Our theme song is by Breakmaster Cylinder. Thank you so much for listening. and we'll see you again soon.